I'm Tanzina Vega, and you're listening to The Takeaway. And we're continuing to explore the international reaction to Joe Biden's presidential win. Today, we turn to the African nations of Nigeria and Ethiopia, where conflicts in those countries have escalated and could present challenges for a Biden-Harris administration. Tensions are coming to a head in Ethiopia. Prime Minister Abiy launched a military attack on the Tigray nation of Ethiopia after he accused the Tigray People's Liberation Front of attacking a military base in attempt to steal weapons. The conflict has continued to escalate over the past 2 weeks, and thousands have already fled the region to Sudan. Here to help us understand the context in the conflict is Samuel Getachew, a local journalist in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, with The Reporter. Samuel, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Yinka Adegoke, the Africa editor for Quartz. Yinka, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So, Samuel, let's start with you. Tell us about the tensions that led to the violence between Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy and leaders of the semi-autonomous Tigray region.
Well, it began 2 weeks ago when Ethiopia accused the TPLF government. That has been taken out now because there's a new administration that has been appointed by the prime minister. When he accused them, which they later admitted, to attacking a military base in Tigray and killing soldiers. And that's what made them, according to them, attack the region in order to take out the leadership that they've accused of criminal acts, human rights abuses in the past. You know, as you know, the TPLF was in government for the last 27 years before Abiy came to power. They've been having this conflict since a year ago, accused of all kinds of stuff, including holding an election when the House of Federation in Addis Ababa told them not to, and which they won by 100%, reminding many Ethiopians of the election of 2007. When they were in government in Addis Ababa, which they also claimed to have won by 100%. So it's a mixture of all kinds of things that pushed the federal government to act. And that's where we are right now.
Now, Yinka, Prime Minister Abiy was appointed in 2018, and he was seen as a reformer who was releasing political prisoners from jail. But about a year ago, he was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for forging peace with neighboring Eritrea after decades of conflict. What were the hopes for his administration, and how have things actually played out?
Well, the hopes were he would lead Ethiopia, which is, as you know, Africa's second most populous country, down the road of democracy, because he was seen as this this reformer. And there was a lot of excitement. He gets the Nobel Peace Prize, and governments around the world, leaders around the world, are sort of patting him on the back, and everyone's excited about it because Ethiopia has so much potential. It's been the fastest growing country, one of the fastest growing countries in the world, not just in Africa, for over the last decade. But Ethiopia has a very what we can call a sort of a tense federation of different regions of semi-autonomous nations, if you like, and it's been very tricky to hold that together while also sort of dangling this promise of democracy. Instead, it's almost been the reverse. If you speak to Ethiopians now, they feel that there's a lot of displeasure across the different regions, not just in Tigray, even among his own people, the Oromos, Amhara. There are all these concerns where the locals feel they're not being given the freedom and that reach for democracy that seemed very likely at the start.
Samuel, human rights observers are concerned that the conflict that's taking place in Ethiopia will further destabilize the Horn of Africa. What is the logic here in targeting Eritrea?
But, you know, you have to know, I think your listeners need to know that Eritrea was part of Ethiopia at one point, and it was the TPLF government that gave them the right of referendum to have their own nation. But it was after 5 years that the TPLF government was provoked by Eritrea to get into a conflict that killed at least 80,000 people from both sides. Since then, Eritrea has always taken note of Ethiopia's interest or Ethiopia's willingness to fight with them or against them. So for at least 18 years, you know, the Ethiopian government then, the EPRDF government, agreed on Algeria getting involved and trying to have some kind of peace agreement. So once the peace agreement made its own decision, it was the EPRDF government, which is a TPLF government, that decided to disagree with it and walk away. So Eritrea, you know, Ethiopia felt the peace agreement favored Eritrea. But once it was rendered, it was the EPRDF government that walked away. So since then, Isaias Afwerki, the longtime president of Eritrea, has looked down on Ethiopia as an enemy. Not Ethiopia per se, but EPRDF or the TPLF. So 2018, when Abiy came to power and decided to have some kind of peace with Eritrea, the TPLF government was in a disagreement because they felt they weren't part of the engagement. And that might be why the first disagreement with TPLF leadership pushed them to just leave Addis Ababa and go to the state of Tigray, and decided to wage some essence of war with the federal government that they felt was no longer in their interest in Addis Ababa.
Yinka, what does this conflict mean for the larger refugee crisis in Ethiopia?
This is a really troubling time for the Horn of Africa region, which has seen some peace in recent years. But as this conflict, which is like right at the borders of three countries here, you have Ethiopia, obviously, Eritrea, and then Sudan, where, you know, refugees are fleeing after the bombing in Tigray. It could be very problematic, and it could actually not just pull in other countries, it could further destabilize other regions of Ethiopia to the south. So this is what we're watching now, and, you know, there's a lot of concern. The U.S. government, Mike Pompeo, has put out some short statements about, the usual sort of thing, being deeply concerned. But you don't get a sense that the current U.S. administration is fully engaged. They put out the usual statements, but you don't get a sense that they are about to go in and really, you know, get involved.
Well, let's talk about that, because there is a new administration that will be taking office in January, at the end of January. And I'm wondering whether or not that administration, the Biden-Harris administration, is giving any hope to better and improved relations with the United States. Samuel?
You know, we've been watching statements coming from, advisors of Biden, Harris. For example, when Trump said Egypt was in a position to also attack the Renaissance Dam of Ethiopia, it was one of his advisors who said, that's not the role of America, because America is in a position to mediate between Sudan, Egypt, and Ethiopia. So they seem to be more in tune with wanting to be engaged. Susan Rice was a former head of the African Affairs at the State Department. She knows Ethiopia very well. And there's also a few Ethiopian Americans helping Biden in terms of his transition to government. So Ethiopians remain hopeful, because when Trump was president, he's still president until I guess early next year, he was never engaged with the continent. Beyond the insults he's been throwing at the continent, he's never visited any country since he became president. He's looked down on the continent. To even have him to mediate, let alone help this tension to go down, is it confuses lots of people, instead of see America as a beacon of hope, which it has been for a long, long time, despite its shortcomings, despite the fact there are many countries that Americans have their own interest in. But in Ethiopia, they've been involved in developmental aid. America is the biggest funder of Ethiopia's ambitions to become self-sufficient, to have the economy grow. So the funding that was announced in 2012 under Obama is still the funding they're using in Ethiopia right now. But if he did actually became president again, reelected, his legacy would really have had a negative impact. That's beyond whether you agree with aid or not. But again, America, we're hopeful America would be more engaged. I think the world needs America than you know, China. I'm taking sides, maybe because I grew up in Canada. But, you know, we see America's hope. It gave many of us a chance to be educated. My father was personally educated by the generous support of American government during Jimmy Carter a long time ago. So we look up on America and expect the best, not the worst that we've seen the last 4 years.
Samuel Getachew is a local journalist in Ethiopia with The Reporter. Samuel, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And we turn now to Nigeria, where the country has seen massive anti-police brutality protests. And we're continuing our conversation with Yinka Adegoke from Quartz. Yinka, this year we've seen protests in Nigeria, particularly against police brutality with the hashtag #EndSARS. Where do those protests stand right now?
Well, those protests were against police brutality, as you know, and police brutality has been a big problem in Nigeria for many, many years, but really sort of peaked in the last few years with this special police unit, which had harassed young people, especially young men, but also young women, on all kinds of spurious reasons, kidnapping and arrests and allegedly some killings of innocent people. So these protests were well organized, with thousands and thousands of people, and really had got to the point where the government started to get worried. And then we had the horrible incident of innocent protesters being shot at night at the Lekki toll gate. And that is now being investigated. The army denies they were involved. The police say they had nothing to do with it. And it's kind of the usual thing that tends to happen in Nigeria, where no one is accepting blame. But there were plenty of witnesses who saw men in military uniform who were involved in these shootings.
Yinka, what's been the United States response so far to these demonstrations, if any?
It's been very limited. It's been the kind of, as you say, the kind of deeply concerned kind of rhetoric and not too much action. Nigeria has not been at the top of the Trump administration in any kind of positive way throughout the years of this of the Trump administration. So I guess the protesters or whoever, the organizers, could have looked to the United States for the kind of moral support they might have had in previous years. Certainly not with this administration.
Wondering if we can expand the lens a little bit to talk about the Trump administration's relationship with Nigeria. We just spoke about Ethiopia and perhaps other African nations. Has the Trump administration been involved really to any extent that's meaningful during the time that he's been in office?
It's funny, in preparation for this, I went back and looked over a few stories, and I was actually surprised at how bad it has actually been with Nigeria specifically. You know, it started off with this kind of, you know, very sort of patronizing UN meeting where they talked about how some of my friends are getting rich in your countries. And then, you know, then it became about the weapons that the Nigerian government had been trying to get for a long time to take on Boko Haram in the northeast of the country, which the Obama administration had actually been very arguably wisely kind of cautious about selling those weapons to the government, because they understood that some of them would be misused. And they did sell them to the military, but along with that came all kinds of misuse and corruption. And protesters being shot in 2018. The Trump administration said nothing. Trump made comments about President Buhari as a lifeless president and not wanting to meet with him again. Remember the whole countries thing. The really important part about that was that it wasn't so much just the foul language insult. It was really the context of him talking about immigration and not wanting, you know, Africans and those people from Nigeria can go back to their huts or whatever it was he was reported to have said. And then there's the immigration one goes further, because they blocked Nigerians from from getting green cards. They cut student visas for Africans on the basis of people overstaying their visas, other people overstaying their visas. So they cut the number, the amount of student visas that the Africans, in particular Nigerians, can get. Even just recently, think about Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala, the former Nigerian finance minister, you know, trying to run in for the president of the World Trade Organization. And the Trump administration is the only holdout. The European Union, China, everyone else has supported her appointment, but not the Trump administration. So, you know, it's just, there's a long list when you actually really look back on it.
There's one other thing. I mean, the we talked a little bit about in the previous segment about what hopes for the Biden administration could be. But are there any specific areas that you're expecting the Biden administration should deal with, you know, as they take office, that are pressing top of mind, with the conflict in Nigeria, what's happening in Ethiopia, or other issues that you think are should be top of mind for Biden-Harris?
Yeah, all of these are definitely of importance. I think what's going to be really the big change, really, in many sense, in many ways, there's an argument to say if you take a really, you know, really pull back and take a big picture view, there, the U.S.-Africa policy isn't doesn't change very much, regardless of who's in government, Republicans or Democrats, because there's kind of a long-running U.S.-Africa consensus on Capitol Hill. So in terms of real hardcore policy, things don't change that much. But as you can see from just like list I gave you on one country, we refer to the Ethiopia comments earlier, where Trump said, "Well, you know, Egypt could bomb your dam." These kinds of it's more kind of a matter of respect to these countries. It has not been there over the last 4 years, and just having a what you might call a more traditional administration, which actually engages with countries and has actual experts. The thing anyone will tell you in DC is this administration has very few Africa experts, and the Biden administration will almost certainly have quite a few. And that just makes quite a huge difference in how you engage with countries, because you're not coming in with your completely, you know, fixed views. You're speaking to people who've lived in these countries, who've worked in these countries as diplomats, and they kind of know how to engage. And sure, they will always put the U.S. interest first, and that's their job and that's their role, but they kind of understand where the pressure points are and how to engage. And that's been the big thing that's been missing, that this administration has, sure, hasn't changed a huge amount of actual policy, but has certainly changed a lot of attitudes in terms of engaging governments. And frankly, you can already see across Africa with different governments, there's more willingness to reverse some of the sort of democratic progress that's been made over the last, you know, couple of decades, because there's a feeling that, well, they're not really paying attention to us. Will be my guess.
Yinka Adegoke is the Africa editor for Quartz. Yinka, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.